Collins spun around and saw the quicksilver face of the Sliff looking down at her. A liquid silver arm held out the black book.
"Master needs this," the Sliff said. "Take it."
Collins snatched the book.
"Thank you. Thank you, Sliff."
Collins dropped down to get the sorcerer's sand that Richard carried in the leather packs, but he wasn't wearing his big overbelt. She rushed to Kara, still tied in the ropes. Kara's head rolled from side to side as she mumbled, as if she didn't know that Richard had healed her. She was still lost in a prison of her own private terror. Zed had told Collin that the gift couldn't heal maladies of the mind.
"Kara! Kara! Where were you keeping Richard? Where are his things?"
Kara didn't respond. Collin snatched the knife off the floor and sliced through the ropes. Kara just lay there. Collin pressed her hands to Kara's face, making the woman look at her.
"Kara, it's all right now. The rats are gone. They're gone. You're safe. Richard healed you. You're all right." "Rats," Kara mumbled. "Get them off me. Please, please."
Collin hugged her.
"Kara, they're gone. I'm your sister of the Aegil. I need you. Please, Kara, come back to me. Please."
Kara only mumbled.
"Kara,"
Collin wept.
"Richard will die if you don't help me. There are thousands of rooms in the keep. I need to know where you kept him. Please, Kara. Richard helped you. Now he needs your help, or he will die. There's no time. Richard needs you."
Kara's eyes focused as if she were coming awake.
"Richard."
Collin wiped the tears from her face.
"Yes, Richard. Hurry, Kara. I need the belt Richard wears. I need it, or he will die."
Kara brought her hands down, rubbing her wrists, now smooth where they had been cut before. She felt her stomach. Even the old scars were gone.
"I am healed,"
she whispered.
"Lord Rahl healed me." "Yes! Kara, please, Richard is dying. I have the book, but I need the things he keeps in his belt."
Kara abruptly sat up, pulling the red leather across her chest. She buttoned two of the buttons to hold it closed.
"His belt. Yes, you stay with Lord Rahl. I will get it. Hurry!"
Kara stood, swaying for a moment as she steadied herself, and then she dashed from the room. Collin hugged the inky black book to herself. She bent over Richard. He was hardly breathing. She knew that any one of those breaths could be his last. He had given them, Kara and Collin, the rest of his strength.
"Dear spirits, help him. Give him just a little more time, please. He has suffered so much. Please, just give him a little time until I can destroy this vile book."
Collin bent over him and kissed his lips.
"Hold on, Richard. Hold on for me, please. If you can hear me, we have the book. I know how to destroy it. Please, just hold on."
Collin knelt down on a clear spot closer to the door and laid open the book to the third page so she would be ready when Kara returned. She gazed into a vision of a wasteland. There was sand, blown into dunes, stretching into the distance of the phantasm emanating from the book. Collin stared into that barren place and saw runes on the sand, lines drawn in geometric patterns. Her sight was drawn into the pattern of lines that swirled and twisted around. There, in the runes, was light. It flared forth, every color shining out toward her, calling to her.
"Mother, confess her!"
Kara yelled, shaking Colin's shoulders.
"Didn't you hear me? I have Lord Rahl's belt!"
Collin blinked, shaking her head, trying to clear her mind. She snatched the belt and undid the bone holder on the flap of the pack where Richard kept the sorcerer's sand. Inside, she found the leather pouch of white sand. With Kara standing behind her, touching her shoulder, Collin cast a pinch of the white sand into the book. The color boiled and twisted, tumbled and turned. Collin pulled her eyes away and stabbed her hand back into the pack, pulling out the other leather pouch, the one with the black sorcerer's sand. With two fingers, she carefully pulled the top open. Inside, she could see the inky black sand. Troubled, Collin paused. There was something else, something tickling at the back of her mind. The words. Nathan set to say the words, the three chimes, before using the black sand. Three words. What were they? She couldn't remember them. Her mind raced after them, but they kept going around dark corners, and when she turned, they were gone again. Her thoughts mired in staggering fright. She ached in desperate thought, but the words wouldn't come to her. Richard had them written in the palm of his hand. Colin turned to go to read them from his palm and froze. Drefn, leaning up against the well of the slough where he had fallen, somehow still hanging to a thread of life, was holding up the sword. Richard was lying right there on the floor within reach. Drefn was going to kill him.
No!
Colin screamed. But the sword was already sweeping down. Faint, maniacal laughter drifted on the air. Colin threw her fist up, calling the blue lightning to protect Richard. It didn't come. She was blocked from her power. Kara was already diving toward Drefn, but she was too far away. She wasn't going to make it. The sword was halfway there. A silver arm swept down and seized Drefn's arm, holding it tight. Colin held her breath. Another liquid silver arm enveloped Drefn's head.
Breathe,
the slough cooed. A voice promising the sating of bestial lust, a voice promising rapture.
I wish you to please me. Breathe.
Drefn's chest rose as he inhaled the slough. He went still, holding the slough in his lungs. The slough freed him, and he slumped to the side. His breath left him, releasing the slough he had inhaled. It drained from his mouth and nose, not silver, but red. Colin felt something inside her part, a profound unraveling, and all at once she joined with her power, a sweet reclaiming that brought a gasp of euphoric inner union. Drefn was dead. As long as they both live. Those were the words. Her oath was ended. The winds had returned her power. Colin was brought out of her daze when she heard Richard gasp for a breath. With renewed panic, she scrambled across the floor and scooped up his right hand where Richard had written the message. She pried open his fingers. The words were gone. The act of stopping Drefn and his blood had scoured away the writing. Colin screamed in frustrated rage. She scrambled back to the open book. She couldn't remember the words. Her mind ached with frustration. She couldn't make the words come. What was she going to do? Maybe if she just threw in the grain of black sand anyway. No, she knew better than to disregard what a wizard like Nathan said to do. She squeezed her head between the heels of her hands as if trying to press the words out. Kara knelt down, grasping her by her shoulders.
Mother Confessor, what's wrong? You must hurry. Lord Rawl is hardly breathing. Hurry!
Tears ran down her face.
I can't remember the words. Oh, Kara, I can't remember them. Nathan told me, but I can't remember them.
Colin clambered back across the floor to Richard. She smoothed a hand down his face.
Richard, please wake up. I need to know the words. Please, Richard, what are the words? The three words.
He struggled to draw a breath, gasping with the effort. He wasn't going to wake. He wasn't going to live. Colin rushed back to the book. She snatched up the leather pouch of black sand. She would have to do it without the words. Maybe it would work. It would work. It had to work. She couldn't make her hands move. She knew better. It wouldn't work unless she said the words. She knew it wouldn't. She had grown up around wizards and magic. She knew better than to disregard what Nathan had told her. Without the words, it wouldn't work. She fell forward with a wail, beating her fists against the stone floor.
I can't remember the words. I can't.
Kara put an arm around Colin, making her sit up, holding her in a gentle embrace.
Calm down. Take a breath.
Good. Let it go. Take another.
Now, picture in your mind this man, Nathan. Picture him telling you the words and how happy you were that you could save Richard's life.
Colin tried. She tried so hard she wanted to scream.
I can't remember them, she wept. Richard's going to die because I can't remember three stupid words. I can't remember the three chimes.
The three chimes? Kara asked. You mean Richani, Santrosi, Vasi, those three chimes? Colin stared in disbelief.
That's them, the three chimes. Richani, Santrosi, Vasi. Richani, Santrosi, Vasi, I remember. Thank you, Kara, I remember.
Colin pulled out a grain of black sorcerer's sand between her thumb and finger.
Richani, Centrosi, Vasi,
she said again, for good measure. She tossed the grain of black sand into the book. She and Kara both held their breath. A hum slowly built in the room. The air seemed to dance and vibrate. Light of every color flared forth, twisting and tumbling, pulsing and throbbing. It grew with the hum until Colin had to turn her eyes away. Rays of light swept across the stone walls. Kara put a hand up before her face. Colin did the same, so bright was the light that just turning away was not enough. And then darkness began gathering, like the inky black of a night stone, or of the book's cover itself, pulling the light and color back into the book. It drew all the light from the room until all fell into darkness. In that depth of sightless obscurity, there came such terrible moans that Colin was thankful she couldn't see their source. The wails of souls filled the room, scattering about in a blind, mad frenzy, swirling through the air, lost, frantic, wild. The sound of distant laughter that Colin knew all too well died into a wail that stretched into eternity. When the light of the candles returned, the book was gone, only a stain of ash to show where it had been. Colin and Kara rushed to Richard. He opened his eyes. He still didn't look well, but he looked more alert. His breathing was stronger and even. "What happened?" he asked. "I can breathe. My head isn't pounding." "The Mother Confessor saved you," Kara announced. "As I have told you so often, women are stronger than men."
"Kara,"
Colin whispered,
"how did you know the three chimes?"
Kara shrugged. "The Legate Rishi knew the words with the message from the winds. When you said the three chimes, they just came to me through his magic as the other messages from the winds came to me." Colin pressed her forehead to Kara's shoulder in relief, in wordless gratitude. With equally silent empathy, Kara stroked Colin's back. Richard blinked and scrunched his eyes as if clearing his head. When he sat up, Colin leaned to hug him, but Kara held her back.
"Please, Mother Confessor, may I be first?
I fear that once you start, I may never again get a chance." Colin grinned. "You're right about that. Take all you want." As Kara threw her arms around Richard and squeezed for all she was worth, whispering private, heartfelt words in his ear, Colin stood and faced the Slif.
"I can't thank you enough, Slif. You saved Richard. You are a friend, and I will honor you as long as I live."
The silver face warped into a satisfied smile. She looked down at Drefn's body.
"He had no magic, but he was using his talent to stop the flow of blood so that he might live long enough to kill Master. It is death to breathe me if you have no magic. I am pleased I could take him on a journey to the world of the dead."
Richard stood on wobbly legs and slipped an arm around Colin's waist.
"Slif, you have my gratitude too. I don't know what it is I could ever do for you, but if it is within my power, it's yours for the asking."
The Slif smiled.
"Thank you, Master. I would be pleased to have you travel with me. You will be pleased."
Even though he was unsteady on his feet, Richard's eyes had the sparkle back.
"Yes, we would like to travel. I need to rest for a time first, to finish recovering and get my strength back, and then we will travel, I promise you."
Colin took up Kara's hand.
"Are you all right?
I mean, are you really all right? Everything?"
Kara nodded with a haunted look in her eyes.
"I still have the ghosts of the past with me, but I am all right. Thank you, sister, for helping me.
It is not often that a moored Sith can depend on anyone else for help, but with Richard as Lord Rawl and you as Mother Confessor, all things seem possible."
Kara glanced to Richard. "When you healed the Mother Confessor, you seemed to glow as if a spirit was with you."
"I believe
The good spirits helped me. I do indeed. I recognized the spirit. It was Raina. Richard nodded. It felt like Raina. When I was in the spirit world, Denna told me that Raina was at peace and knows that we love her. I think we should tell this to Berdine, Kara said. Richard slipped his other arm around Kara's waist and started them all toward the door. I think we should, too. Chapter 68. Several days later, when Richard was almost fully recovered, Tristan Bashkar's uncle, King Joran Bashkar, the King of Jara, rode into Adendril at the head of his company of King's Lancers. On the point of each of the 100 lances was a head. Colin watched from a window as the lances, under the watchful eye of Daharan soldiers, were deployed in an arrow-straight double row along the entrance to the Confessor's palace. Flags of state flew from poles held by the first opposing pair of Jarian soldiers. Joran Bashkar, with his star guide, Javis Kedar, behind him, waited until the lances were lined up perfectly, their armor gleaming in the sun, before he strode regally between the row of heads toward the entrance. As she peered out the window, Colin touched Kara's arm. Go get Richard. Have him meet me in the council chambers. Kara was out the door and on her way before Colin could turn to be on her way, too. Colin Amnell, Mother Confessor, sitting in the first chair under the figures of Magda Cirrus, the first Mother Confessor, and her wizard, Merit, painted across the expanse of the dome above the council chambers, waited for her wizard. Her heart lifted when she saw him sweep into the room, golden cloak billowing out behind, dressed in the gold-trimmed black outfit of a war wizard, the gold and ruby amulet on his chest gleaming in the streamers of sunlight through which he strode, his silver wristbands burnished and bright. The Sword of Truth at his hip caught the light, sending out a starburst of sunlight to glitter across the polished marble.
"Good morning, my queen!"
he called out, his voice echoing around the huge room.
"How do you fare this, your last day of freedom?"
Colin rarely laughed in the council chambers. It had always seemed improper. She laughed now, the lilting sound echoing around the cavernous room, bringing a smile to the guards.
"I fare well, Lord Rall," she said as he ascended the dais.
Kara and Berdine followed in his shadow, along with Ulic and Egan, taking up places to either side. "What's going on?" he asked more seriously. "I heard that some king just rode in with 100 heads on pikes."
"The King of Jara. Remember? You sent him Tristan's head demanding his surrender?"
"Oh, that king." Richard slid down into a chair beside her. "Whose heads are they?"
"I guess we're about to find out."
The guards pulled open the double doors. Light stabbed in through the doorway, silhouetting the two figures as they approached. Once before the dais, the king spread his violet cape, trimmed in spotted white fox, and went to one knee in a deep bow. Behind him, the star guide went to both knees in his bow.
"Rise, my children," Colin said in formal response to the bow.
"Mother Confessor," King Joran said, "how good to see you again."
His trim figure, his graying hair meticulously cut so that it swept back as if he were facing the wind, his elegant scabbard and sword, his ribbons, his sash, his red and blue and gold embroidered coat, and his jeweled pins made him look like one of the most grand of kings, Colin had always thought.
"And you, King Joran," Colin lifted an introductory hand. "This is Lord Rall, master of the Daharan Empire, and my husband-to-be."
The king lifted an eyebrow.
"As I have heard it told, my congratulations."
Richard leaned forward. "I sent you a message. What is your reply?" Colin thought that she had a lot of work to do, teaching Richard proper diplomatic decorum. The king let out a belly laugh.
"It will be a pleasure being part of an empire led by a man who doesn't jibber-jabber me to death."
He lifted a thumb, indicating the star guide behind him.
"Like some people."
And does that mean that you surrender? Richard pressed.
It does indeed, Lord Rawl, Mother Confessor. A large delegation from the Imperial Order came to Sandalar and invited us to join the Imperial Order. We had been waiting for a sign as requested by Javas Kedar here. Tristan thought to take matters into his own hands and tried to strike a favorable deal with the Order. When the plague came, we thought it showed the power of the Order, and we feared that, I must admit, but when you swept the plague from the land, that was sign enough for me. Javas here will no doubt soon find the appropriate sign in the sky to confirm my decision. If not, there are other star guides.
A red-faced Javas Kedar bowed.
As I told you, Your Highness, as your star guide, I will be able to confirm your decision without difficulty.
The king scowled over his shoulder.
Good.
And the heads? Richard asked.
The delegation from the Imperial Order. I brought you their heads to show you my sincerity. I wanted you to see that this is a choice I make with conviction. I thought it a fitting answer to the likes of people who would cast a plague into the land to kill indiscriminately. It shows their true nature, putting the lie to all the things they say.
Richard bowed his head to the king. Thank you, King Joran.
Who ordered the beheading of my nephew, Tristan?
I did, Richard said. As I stood on a balcony watching, with the Mother Confessor at my side, Tristan entered the Mother Confessor's bedroom and stabbed a nightdress stuffed with tow that we had placed there. He thought he was killing her.
The king shrugged.
Justice befits all, no matter his station. I bear no grudge. Tristan did not serve our people well either. I look forward to the day we can be rid of the threat from the Order.
As do we, Richard said. With your help, we are that much closer to that day.
As the king went to see to the signing of papers and to discuss logistics with the Daharan command, Richard and Colin rose to leave, but were interrupted by a guard.
What is it?
Colin asked.
There are three men asking to see Lord Rawl.
Three men? Who are they?
They did not give their names, Mother Confessor, but they said they were Rochmos.
Richard sat back down. Send them in. Under the desk, Colin reached over and curled her fingers around his hand, giving him a reassuring squeeze as three figures in flaxen cloaks, with broad hoods pulled up onto their heads and with their hands folded before them, glided up to the dais.
I am Lord Rawl, Richard said.
Yes, the one in front said. We feel the bond.
He lifted a hand out to his side.
This is Brother Kurloff, and this is Brother Hulk.
He pushed his hood back to reveal a heavily creased face and a head of thinning gray hair.
I am Marsden Tabor.
Richard warily eyed the three men.
Welcome to Aiden Drill. I hear you wanted to see me. What is it I can do for you?
We are searching for Drefan Rawl, Marsden Tabor said.
Richard rubbed his thumb along the edge of the desk as he watched the three men. I'm sorry, but your high priest is dead. The two in back shared a look. Marsden Tabor's expression darkened.
High priest? I am the high priest of the Rochmos, and have been since before Drefan was born.
Richard frowned. Drefan told us he was the high priest. Marsden Tabor stroked his temple as he searched for words.
Lord Rawl, I'm afraid that your brother was given to delusion. If he told you that he was the high priest of the Rochmos, then he was deceiving you for reasons I fear to imagine. He was left with us by his mother when he was a young boy. We raised him, knowing what his father would do should he come to discover a son without the gift. Drefan could be dangerous. Once we realized this, we kept him confined within our community to prevent him from hurting anyone. He was talented at healing, and we always hoped that he would come to be at peace with himself. We hoped that through healing he could find a way to prove his worth in his own right. A while back, he vanished. Several of our healers were found dead. They had been killed in a most unpleasant fashion. Torture. We have been searching for Drefan since. We have been to several places where he had been and found women who had been murdered in a similar way.
Jeffin had an unsavory attitude toward women. His father, too, was not inclined to be kind toward women. Though he escaped his father in body, I think he failed to escape him in spirit. I pray he has not caused harm to anyone here. Richard was silent for a time before he spoke. We had a plague. A terrible plague. Thousands died. Without regard for himself, Jeffin, upholding the noble ideals of the Roch Moss, worked to help those stricken. He shared his knowledge and in that way may have prevented yet more from dying. My brother, in his own way, helped stop the plague, and in so doing, he died. Marsden Tabor folded his hands before him again as he studied Richard's eyes. Is this the way you wish it remembered? He was my brother. Partly because of his being here, I learned the power of forgiveness. Colin squeezed Richard's hand under the table. Thank you for seeing me, Lord Rawl. Marsden Tabor bowed. In your light we thrive. Thank you, Richard whispered. The three healers started away, but Marsden Tabor turned back. I knew your father. You do not take after him. Jeffin did. Not many will mourn the passing of your father or your brother. I can see in your eyes, Lord Rawl, a healer, a true healer besides a warrior. A wizard, as a healer, must be in balance or he is lost. Dahara is well served, at long last. Call on us if you have need. Ulick let out a sigh when the doors closed.
Lord Rawl, there are other representatives also wishing to see you.
If you are well enough,
Kara added.
Someone always wants to see us.
Richard stood and held out his hand to Colin.
General Curson can see them. Don't we have something more important to do?
Are you sure you are well enough?
Colin asked.
I've never felt better. You haven't had a change of mind, have you?
Colin smiled as she took his hand and stood.
Never. If Lord Rawl is fully recovered, what are we waiting for? My things are ready.
About time, Berdine muttered. As they waited for Richard to return, Colin put a reassuring hand on Kara's back.
She wouldn't lie to us, Kara. If the Slif says you can travel, you can travel.
The Slif had tested Kara, Berdine, Ulick, and Egan, all of them thinking that, as guards, they should go along to protect Richard and Colin. Only Kara had passed the Slif's test. Richard guessed that it was because Kara had linked with the Andolian leader, Legate Rishi, and he must have an element of both sides of the magic. Kara didn't like anything to do with magic, and the Slif was definitely magic enough to give her pause. Colin leaned close and whispered in Kara's ear,
You have passed bigger tests than this, in this room. I am a sister of the Aegil. I will hold your hand the whole way.
Kara eyed Colin, and then the Slif.
You have to do it, Kara, Berdine pleaded. You will be the only Mord Sith at the wedding of our Lord Rawl and Mother Confessor.
Kara's brow twitched as she leaned toward Berdine.
Lord Rawl healed you one time,
Berdine nodded.
Since then, have you felt a special bond with him?
Berdine smiled.
Yes, that is why I want you to go. I'll be all right. I know Reyna would want you to go too.
She gave Ulick a backhanded slap on his stomach.
Besides, someone has to stay here and keep Ulick and Egan in line.
Ulick and Egan together rolled their eyes. Kara put a hand on Colin's arm as she leaned close and whispered,
Since Lord Rawl healed you, have you felt it too?
Colin smiled.
I felt it before he healed me. It is called love, Kara. Truly caring about someone else, not only because you are bonded to them, but because you share something in your heart. When he healed you, you felt his love for you. But I knew before that.
Colin shrugged. Maybe it was just a more vivid way of feeling it. Kara lifted her Aegil, rolling it in her fingers.
Maybe he is a brother of the Aegil.
Colin smiled. With all we've been through together, I guess we are all as close as family. Richard strode into the room.
I'm ready. Shall we travel?
Richard couldn't take the Sword of Truth into the Slif. Its magic was incompatible with life being sustained while traveling. He had gone up to leave his sword in the first wizard's enclave, where it would be safe, where no one but he could get to it. Except Zed, of course. But Zed was no longer living. At least Colin didn't think he was alive. Richard refused to doubt that he was. Richard rubbed his hands together.
So, Kara, are you going or not?
I would really like you to be there.
It would mean a lot to us.
Kara smiled. I must go. You are incapable of protecting yourself. Without a Mord Sith, you would be helpless.
Richard turned to the silver face watching them. Sliff, I know that I put you to sleep before, but you didn't stay asleep. Why?
You did not put me into the deep sleep from which only one such as yourself can call me. You put me at rest. Others can call me if I am only at rest.
But we can't allow those others to use you. Can't you refuse? Can't you just not go to them if they call? We can't have you taking Jagang's wizards and such all over creation to cause trouble.
The Sliff regarded him with a thoughtful expression.
Those who made me the Sliff made me this way. I must travel with those who ask, if they have the price of power required.
She moved to the edge of her well, closer to him.
But if I was asleep, only you have the power to call me master, and then the others could not use me.
But I tried to put you to sleep before, and it didn't work.
The Sliff's smile returned.
You did not have the silver required before.
Silver. The Sliff reached out and touched his wristbands.
Silver.
You mean, when I crossed my wrists to put you to sleep before, it didn't work because I didn't have these? And now, if I put you to sleep, it will work?
Yes, master.
Richard thought a moment.
Does it hurt or anything when you are put into this sleep?
No. It is rapture for me when I sleep, because I am with the rest of my soul.
Richard's eyes widened.
When you sleep, you go to the world of souls?
Yes, master. I am not to tell anyone how it is that they can put me into the sleep, but you are the only master, and since you wished to know, you will not be angry that I tell you.
Richard sighed with relief.
Thank you, Sliff. You have given us a way to prevent the wrong people from using you. I'm glad to know that you will be pleased to go into your sleep.
Richard hugged Verdine.
Take care of everything until we get back.
I am to be in charge, then?
Verdine asked. Richard frowned suspiciously.
All three of you are in charge. Are you sure you heard that, Mistress Verdine?
Ulick asked.
I don't want you to later say that you heard no such orders.
Verdine made a face at him as Richard helped Colin up onto the well.
I heard. All three of us are to take care of things.
Colin adjusted the bone knife on her arm and the pack on her back. She took Kara's hand as she climbed up.
Sliff, Richard said with a big grin, we wish to travel.
Chapter 69.
Breathe.
Colin let go the silken rapture and drew in a breath, and the world. As they sat up on the edge of the Sliff's stone wall, Colin smacked Kara on the back.
Breathe, Kara. Come on, let it go. Let out the Sliff and breathe.
Kara finally bent forward and released the Sliff from her lungs, reluctantly pulling a breath. Colin remembered how hard it was the first time, not only to breathe the Sliff, but to then breathe the air again. Kara had held on tightly to Richard and Colin's hands the whole time they traveled. Kara looked up with a silly grin.
That was wonderful.
Richard gave them both a hand down. Colin adjusted the bone knife on her arm and the small pack on her back. It felt good to be in her traveling clothes again. Kara thought that Colin looked on in pants.
This is where you wished to travel,
the Sliff said.
The Jacopo treasure.
Richard looked around the cave, having to duck down because the ceiling was so low.
I don't see any treasure.
It's in the next room, Colin told him. Someone must be expecting us. They left a torch burning.
Are you ready to sleep?
Richard asked the Sliff.
Yes, master. I look forward to being with my soul.
The thought of what the Sliff was, what the wizards had made her into, gave Colin shivers.
Will it make you unhappy when I need to wake you again?
No, master. I am always ready to please.
Richard nodded.
Thank you for your help. We all are in your debt. Have a good sleep.
The Sliff smiled at him as Richard crossed his wrists, closing his eyes, calling the magic. The shiny silver face, reflecting the dancing torchlight, softened,
melting back into the pool of quicksilver. Richard's fists began to glow. The silver wristbands he wore brightened to such intensity that Colin could see the other side of them through his flesh and bone, and the way they touched, they formed into endless twin loops, the symbol for infinity. The pool of sparkling silver took on the glow as the Slif sank down into her well, slowly at first, and then with gathering speed until she vanished into the far darkness below. Richard took the reed torch, and the three of them moved out through a wide, low passageway, following the twisting, turning route through dark brown rock, until they came at last to an expansive room. Colin gestured around the room. The Jacopo treasure. Richard held the torch up. Torchlight reflected back in thousands of golden sparkles from the room, filled with gold in nearly every form, from nuggets and crude ingots to golden statues.
Well, it isn't hard to see why it's called the Jacopo treasure, Richard said.
He pointed toward the shelves.
Looks like something is missing.
Colin saw what he meant. When I was here before, those shelves were packed full of rolled vellum scrolls. She sniffed the air. Something else is missing, too. This room was filled with foul air before. It's gone now. She remembered how it made her gag and cough and her head spin, having to breathe the stench. On the floor of the cave was a smoldering heap of ash. Colin swiped the toe of her boot across the ash. I wonder what happened here. The flame of the torch whipped and fluttered as they followed the twisting tunnel up and out into a golden dawn. Thin bands of violet clouds drifted across the sunrise. Luminous gold, more stunning than the Jacopo treasure, edged the clouds. Verdant grasslands spread out before them, smelling clean and fresh. It looks like the Azrith Plains in spring, Kara said, before the high heat of summer bakes it barren. Broad swaths of wildflowers at their feet led in the general direction of the mud people. Colin took Richard's hand. It was a beautiful morning for a walk through the spring grasslands of the wilds. It was a beautiful day to be married. Long before they reached the mud people's village, they could hear the sound of drums drifting out onto the plains. Laughter and song filled the morning air.
Sounds like the mud people are having a banquet, Richard said. What do you think that's about?
His voice sounded uneasy. She felt the same. Banquets were usually held to call the spirit ancestors in preparation for a gathering. Chandalin met them not far from the village. He was wearing the coyote hide of an elder. His hair was slicked down with sticky mud. He was bare-chested and had on his ceremonial dress of buckskin pants and his finest knife, and he carried his best spear. Grim-faced, Chandalin strode forward and slapped Colin.
Strength to Confessor Colin.
Richard caught Kara by the wrist.
Easy, he whispered. We told you about this. It's the way they greet people.
Colin returned the slap, a show of respect for a person's strength. Strength to Chandalin and the mud people. It is good to be home. She fingered the coyote hide. You are an elder now? He nodded.
Elder Bregenderen died of a fever. I was named elder.
Colin smiled. A wise choice, them picking you. Chandalin stood before Richard, appraising him a moment. The two men had once been foes. Chandalin finally slapped Richard harder than he had Colin.
Strength to Richard with the temper. It is good to see you again, too. I am happy that you are to marry the Mother Confessor so that she will not pick Chandalin.
Richard returned the slap in kind.
Strength to Chandalin. You have my gratitude for protecting Colin on your journey together.
He lifted a hand.
This is our friend and protector, Kara.
Chandalin was a protector of his people, and the term had special meaning to him. He lifted his chin as he looked into her eyes. He slapped her harder than he had slapped either Richard or Colin.
Strength to Protector Kara.
It was fortunate that Kara wasn't wearing her armored gloves. As hard as she punched him, she would have broken his jaw. Chandalin grinned when he straightened his neck.
Strength to Chandalin, she said to him, and then to Richard. I like this custom.
Kara reached out and ran a finger over a few of Chandalin's scars.
Very nice. This one here is excellent. The pain must have been exquisite.
Chandalin frowned at Colin and spoke in his language.
What does that last word mean?
It means that it must have been intense pain, Colin told him.
She had taught Chandalin her language, and he did very well, but he still had some to learn. Chandalin grinned with pride.
Yes, it was very painful. I wept for my mother.
Kara lifted an eyebrow to Colin.
I like him.
Chandalin looked Kara up and down, taking in the red leather and the shape of her.
You have fine breasts.
Her aegil flicked up into her fist. Colin put a restraining hand on Kara's arm.
The mud people have different customs,
she whispered.
To them, it means that you look like a healthy, strong woman, able to bear children and raise them to be healthy. To them, this is a strictly proper compliment.
She leaned closer, lowering her voice so that Chandalin couldn't hear.
Just don't tell him that you would like to see him with the mud washed out of his hair, or you will be inviting him to give you those children.
Kara took in all this, considering Colin's words with care. Finally, she turned and, bending over a little, lifted her red leather to expose a nasty scar.
This one was very painful, like the one you have.
Chandalin grunted with knowing appreciation. I had more on my front, but Lord Rawl made them disappear. It is a shame. Some were quite remarkable. Richard and Colin followed behind Chandalin and Kara as he showed her his weapons, and they discussed the worst place to be wounded. She was impressed with his knowledge.
Chandalin, Colin asked, what's going on? Why has a banquet been called?
He looked over his shoulder as if she were deranged.
It is a wedding banquet. For your wedding.
Colin and Richard shared a look.
But how did you know we were coming to be married?
Chandalin shrugged.
The Birdman told me.
This is the end.